Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness and mindset. Today's guest is mental toughness coach, Dre Baldwin, on building confidence, developing discipline and why you should never fake it until you make it. We focus heavily on the mindset side of things today. Dre's specialty is in building discipline, in building confidence, in developing mental toughness. And in today's podcast, we talk about the importance of your mindset when it comes to any goal that you're trying to hit, whether it's fat loss, building muscle, a relationship goal, business goal, life goal in general. We talk about the link between discipline and confidence, how discipline works in both directions and how importance of your habits, how to avoid being a pig, professional information gatherer, or what I call mentally masturbating, where you can hear great information on a podcast or read it in a book and not be able to apply it. So we jump around on a lot of different mindset-based topics today. So if you're someone who struggles with the confidence side, you struggle with building discipline, you struggle with just your mindset, you feel like your own biggest enemy lives between your two ears sometimes, and you want to be able to hold your head up high, set a goal, go after it and do it, then this is the podcast for you. So without further ado, here is today's podcast with mental toughness coach Dre Baldwin on building confidence, developing discipline, and why you should never fake it until you make it. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dre Baldwin. Dre is a mental toughness coach and author of 29 books. In just 5 years, he went from his high school team's bench to a 9-year professional basketball career. At the same time, Dre built a content publishing empire, blogging since 2005 and publishing videos to YouTube starting in 2006. Dre has published over 7,000 videos with his content being viewed over 73 million times and has over 137,000 subscribers on YouTube. Dre's daily work on Your Game podcast has over 3 million listeners, and he has also given 4 TED Talks. Dre teaches the discipline, confidence, mental toughness, and initiative to your work and life that puts you in the top 1% of performers. I'm looking forward to talking all things discipline, confidence, and mental toughness in general in today's episode. Dre, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Brian. I'm excited to be here.
Dre, you are an absolute grinder. When I was doing research for this podcast, I literally tried to get, sometimes I don't have any issue trying to draw up what to say about the person in the introduction, but you have done so much. It was a case of which do I pick? So before we kind of dive into mental toughness, confidence, building discipline, talk a little bit about your backstory. Just take it in whatever direction you want. As I said to you right before we came on air, it's hard to say which particular area of your backstory to go into, so I'll let you have free liberty with that. So tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I come from the city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now I live in Miami, Florida. And background was sports. I was always into sports as a kid. You know, played the backyard sports. Where I'm from wasn't the backyard. It was the driveway and the concrete. Played some kickball, street ball, you know, football, touch football, all that stuff. My first actual official sports activity was playing American football. Didn't get a chance to really play because my family couldn't afford all the football equipment that you needed. Then I moved on to baseball, played that for a couple years, but I wasn't really talented at baseball. I mean, my ceiling was pretty much to be mediocre. So I finally gave up on baseball in my early teens, and that's when I stumbled into basketball. This is around age of 14. So at that point, you know, I wanted to play basketball, but if you're trying to go somewhere in a sport, age 14 is actually pretty late to be starting if you're trying to play college, let alone in the pros. But that was a sport that I had gotten to, and I didn't see any other options for myself athletically. So I stayed with basketball. I didn't make my high school team until I was a senior. I scored 2 points a game, which in basketball is not a lot. It's a lot. I tell people if you're playing hockey or soccer, that's a lot. But in basketball, 2 points is not a lot. So then I moved on. After high school, I wanted to keep playing. So I went to college. I was going to go, you know, based on my academic performance. I was pretty good in high school. But athletically, I didn't have any kind of resume. I didn't have a scholarship. So I had to walk on to play college sports, which means I was not invited. None of the coaches knew who I was. I literally walked into the gym and had to prove myself as a complete nobody in college. And I did that, and I was able to play college basketball. But the thing is, I was playing at the Division III level, which is the third tier of college sports here in the USA. So most pro athletes that you see on TV, if they played in America in college, they usually played Division I. I was at Division III. So most of us don't go pro. So when I finished college, I still wanted to go pro, but I didn't have any prospects. No job offers, no agents offering to help me get a job, none of that. So for my first year out of college, I worked a couple of normal jobs. I worked at Foot Locker as a salesperson, assistant manager. I worked at Bally Total Fitness selling gym memberships. Then a year removed from graduation, I went to this event called an exposure camp. Now, exposure camp, most people don't know what that is, but it's basically like a job fair, but for athletes, where instead of you showing up with your resume and talking about what you can do, you actually bring your equipment, your fitness gear, and you prove that you're good at basketball. Because the audience at an exposure camp is not just random people off the street who want to watch a basketball game. These are scouts, coaches, agents, managers, and owners from basketball teams all around the world who travel to these events specifically looking for talent. So it's kind of like a casting call, but for basketball. So me and 200 other players who all wanted to play pro basketball, we pay money to come to these events so we can get an opportunity to possibly get seen and get a job. I played pretty well at that exposure camp, and these things are not long. This is like 2 days. So we're not talking like a month long time for you to grow on people. You get 2 days to impress somebody. I did pretty well at that exposure camp. I leveraged the scouting report and the footage from that camp to go and get myself an agent. Now, let me tell you how I got this agent. I think this is an important part of the story is that when I got home from the exposure camp, because I didn't get signed to a contract right there on the spot, but I did well, I had a good scouting report. I started calling. This is 2005 we're talking here. So the internet existed, but it was nothing like what we have now, Brian. So I started calling every basketball agent that I could find on Google. And I mean literally cold calling these agents and saying, hey, here's who I am. Here's what I have. Because at this point, I had some collateral. I had some scouting report and I had the footage I could show them that can prove that I'm good. It wasn't just me saying I'm good. Let me prove it to you. So I started calling these agents. I called about 60 of these agents. Of these 60 agents, 20 of them responded and said, OK, let me see what you have. Show me what you have. Send me your footage. Let me see your scouting report. And out of those 20, one agent, literally one agent, was interested in signing me. That one agent did sign me. He's the one who helped me get my career started overseas. Now, let me tell you a parallel what was going on at this exact same time, Brian. I took that footage because that scouting report and the footage that I got, the footage was on this device called a VHS tape. Now, Brian, you remember VHS tapes?
I remember.
I hope some of you. Okay, great. I hope some of your audience does as well. Anyone who doesn't, ask your parents or Google it. You can see what they look like. But this is a physical thing where you had your footage. It's not a link. So that VHS tape, I knew that, you know, these things, you drop it in water, it gets hot, you leave it in the sun, it gets broken, you lose all your footage. And this is the most important footage that I owned. So I needed it somewhere that it could be safe. So I heard that there was this new website where you could put as much footage up for free as you want to, called YouTube.com. So I took that VHS tape to an audio visual store, got it put on a data CD, and I uploaded my footage to YouTube. And I wasn't thinking anything of it. But a few months later, I went back to that YouTube website just to make sure it was still there. And there were comments on the video. There were basketball players who were just asking me questions about, hey, who taught you how to play? Or how often do you practice? Or, you know, can you make a video on dribbling? Can you make one on shooting? Can you make one on dunking? And I realized, Brian, that this was an underserved audience of basketball players who were just like me, except they were 10 years younger. So they had the benefit of going to the internet to crowdsource information, whereas somebody like myself, I just had to figure it out on my own. So I could basically be the source of knowledge for these young players. But again, let's remember, this is 2005. So there's no business opportunity in making YouTube videos in 2005. So who cares that these players want my help? Didn't really matter. So I made videos. I would still make the videos sporadically because I knew I could help these players out, but it was not a focus of mine. And at the same time, I'm playing overseas. So around 2009, and I'm going to speed the story up here. Around 2009, I found myself unemployed. I was a free agent in pro basketball. I had been playing a few places, but at this point I was home in the USA, a free agent. And I asked myself a really important question, Brian, which was how can I combine basketball with the internet, which I had a natural inclination, and how can I make money? How can I do all three at the same time? And that's when I started focusing on more on what we now call a personal brand, creating content, what we now know as social media, entrepreneurship, creating my own products and services. And if people remember, anyone who knows what it was like at that point, 2008 through 2010, content was just a brand new phrase. Social media was not a normal thing to say. Being an influencer didn't exist. So these seem like common sense ideas today, but back then they were not common sense. So I really started focusing on doing that. And that's where the whole work on your game brand, the Dre All Day brand, all the stuff that I do now came to fruition. And about a year after that, that's when basketball players really started asking me about mindset because they heard about my story, my background. Like, man, you only played 1 year of high school. You walked on in college. You didn't even have a job offer coming out of college, but you kept trying. What was it that had you keep going? And that's how I started doing this series on YouTube called The Weekly Motivation. And it was just a 2 to 5 minute selfie video I would do, again, before selfie videos were cool, every Monday on YouTube. I did that for about 400 weeks in a row. And those videos became the foundation of the entire work on your game philosophy and framework that I teach today. And it was me just talking about things like discipline, showing up all the time and believing in yourself and keep going even when things aren't working out. And how do you become someone who can start a fire instead of waiting for a fire to start for you? And that is essentially what I do today. So fast forward to today. I stopped playing ball in 2015. I now help professionals from all walks of life take the mental tools to help you get to the top 1% in sports and apply those same tools at work and in everyday life. And one last thing I'll add here, Brian, and I'll stop talking, is when I started doing those weekly motivation videos, a bunch of people who didn't even play sports, they started seeing these videos. I don't know how they found them because all of my audience were basketball players. But these people would see these videos where I was talking mindset, and they would say, Dre, look, I don't play ball, but the way that you broke down confidence in that video, the way you're talking about mental toughness, listen, anybody can use that. That's not relegated to just athletes. So that planted that seed in my mind. Okay, when I'm done playing ball, I can take this aspect of what I'm doing and I can spread this to a world that is bigger than sports. Because I always saw my message and what I did and even myself as bigger than just an athlete, no more than an athlete without having to put the hashtag. So that's how I always saw myself. And then when I stopped playing ball, that's exactly what I did and is what I'm still doing to this day.
Such an inspirational story. Like when I was going through what you've been through, how you got to where you're at now, and that turning what effectively was your passion into the career, I think is such a mind-opening journey for people who think that there's limits here. You know, it's like, what are you passionate about? What do you love? How can you make money from it? And I think that alone from the business side is really important. So I highly recommend people check that out as well. The content on YouTube, the podcast, etc., from the business standpoint. But to keep it on the mindset side here, Dre, I know your foundation pillars are confidence, mental toughness, discipline. Do you have any one of those three at the bottom of the pyramid, or do you think they're all equally important when it comes to developing your mindset in general?
Yeah, discipline is number one because that's the starting point of that's where everything else comes from. A lot of people, usually when people are asking about mindset, the number one thing everybody wants is confidence, right? My coaching clients, I just want to be more confident. I want to believe in myself more. I want to have more self-esteem. I want to have a healthier self-image. What a lot of people don't understand is that confidence is sourced from discipline. The more disciplined you are, the more confident you have earned the right to be. And if you really think about it, the most confident people you know are usually very disciplined individuals. And the most disciplined people are usually very confident. And the reason is, if we just look at what confidence is your belief in your ability to do something. Now, how do you build that belief if you haven't done it before? It's having the discipline of showing up and doing the work every single day. The more often you do the work, the stronger that you build that muscle of actually doing the thing tangibly, but also you build the emotional and spiritual muscle of knowing that you did the thing. And real confidence is not what you show on the outside or what you post on your social media feed. It's the energy that you have within you, that people can feel it off of you. People can read it on you. That's the real confidence. And that comes from you knowing what you're really doing on a day-to-day basis. That discipline is what builds confidence. So that's why discipline is the foundation upon which everything else is built. And then on top of that, the mental toughness, which is the next level, which is dealing with the fact that not everything's going to work out the way that you want it to work out at all times. How do you keep going? Why do you keep showing up and being disciplined anyway, even though following the plan hasn't produced a result? And being confident hasn't produced a result. How do you keep going? So discipline is, to answer your question here, I don't want to give away too much. You might have other questions for me. So discipline is the foundational piece of this entire philosophy, showing up every day.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask how to build that because I think what can be potentially a more useful approach for this question for people who struggle is, why do people struggle to be disciplined in their life as opposed to do X, Y, and Z? This is very much a case of, there's reasons that you're not able to do it. You're failing for a particular reason. With discipline, we all have, myself included, whether it's training regimen, diet regimen, work tasks, relationship goals, etc. Discipline is something that can be very, very difficult to adhere to. Why do you think we struggle with it, or why do people struggle with discipline so much, especially when it's the foundation pillar upon which everything else is built? What's been your experience with the people that you've been working with and commenting and working through on social media and people who interact with you on a daily basis? Why do you think we struggle so much with building discipline? What's been your feedback on that?
Great question. Number one reason people struggle with discipline is because you're trying to force yourself to be disciplined. All right, that does not work. And many people think incorrectly that the only way to be disciplined is to force yourself to be disciplined. That is 100% false. When you're trying to force yourself to be disciplined, meaning you're trying to make yourself, let's say, go to the gym and you don't like going to the gym, you might do it a few times if your willpower is strong enough and you're able to push yourself past what you don't want to do, but you're not going to keep doing it. You're not going to do it consistently because you're trying to make yourself do it. Or if you're another reason why people struggle with discipline is if it's somebody else's idea. You hired a personal trainer so that you can come to the gym and work out. But if you don't really want to work out, you can still find a way around that personal trainer. You can just not come to the gym. Personal trainer can't do anything. They can't make you do the push-ups that you don't want to do. They can't make you do burpees if you don't want to. They can't make you show up at 6 a.m. if you don't get in the car and drive to the gym. So the second challenge, reason that people fail with discipline, is because it's somebody else's idea. And the third reason people fail with discipline, Brian, is because there's no strategy behind it. They just say, well, all right, I know I need to do X, so let me just force myself to do X. And that, again, as I already said, is a failing strategy. So to fix these three challenges, I'll give you the fix of all three of these. Number one is you need to create a strategy around your discipline, the thing that you want to be doing. If you want to start blogging or you want to write a book, you need to create a strategy, a system that you can follow on a consistent basis that will help build the habits that become discipline. Because habits are basically the seed of discipline. You decide you want to do this thing, like let's say go to the gym because you want to get in shape. You want to get six-pack abs or you want to lose weight. Now you have to decide what habits, what are the things that I can do consistently? What routines can I put in place that I will actually follow that are going to build the habit so I'll be doing it consistently? That will become discipline. The only difference between a habit and a discipline, a habit is something that you have to think about it at first to build it up. But then once it gets solidified, calcified, then you're doing it automatically without having to think about it. You only have to remember to do it. It's just something that you do. And if you don't do it, you feel like you're missing something. Your subconscious tells you, wait, it's something I didn't do today. And then you're automatically going into it. So the systems, putting the systems in place is what actually builds discipline. It is not you forcing yourself to do it. It does not require a ton of willpower. It does at first. It's kind of like, you know, a rocket blasting off. They say a rocket uses like 90% of its fuel just getting out of the Earth's atmosphere. But once it's out of there, then it can basically cruise. That's the same way the discipline works. And that's why you put the systems and the routines in place first. The next thing is, and this could be the earlier thing, is your discipline must be your idea. In other words, if you feel like you're 30 pounds overweight, but you don't want to do anything about it, someone else thinking you should do something about it is not going to make you be disciplined. Now, they might have a good idea and you might listen to them and say, you know what, that person's right. But until you are saying it to you, it doesn't matter what I or Brian or your personal trainer or anyone else says to you. You must be having the same conversation with yourself that the person who's going to help you is going to have with you. Because if you don't believe it and you're not bought in, doesn't matter how much they are bought in, because you still have to follow whatever that person tells you. Nobody can make you do anything. So even if you hire a coach or you hire a trainer or you hire someone to consult you, you still have to execute on what they're telling you. And if you're not ready to do that, it doesn't matter what that guru or expert says. And this is why I always tell people who are trainers and coaches, listen, the best trainers and the best coaches have the best clients. In other words, the people who are actually willing to do the work. You can't turn garbage into gold, no matter how great of a trainer you are, no matter how motivating your speech is. You have to work with people who actually want to do the work, all right? Because it is work. So those are the two biggest things when it comes to handling the challenge of building discipline for people is having strategies and habits and routines in place so that the discipline happens automatically. And it has to be something that you actually want to do. You cannot force discipline upon yourself. It will not last.
Such great advice. One of the things that I'll regularly say on when I'm talking about nutrition or health and fitness, working as a personal trainer, online coach with people, is I've never eaten a single meal for any of my clients. I've never lifted a single weight for any of my clients. I'm like, they're doing the work. And that empowerment and that kind of taking ownership is literally the thing that determines whether you're going to be successful or not. And the thing that you've to set out to do or whatever your goal is with confidence. Then I've always been a subscriber, Dre. Well, not so much. Let me rephrase. I'm a recent subscriber in the last 4 or 5 years because confidence is something I really struggled with for large parts of my life up until probably my mid-20s. And then I got a little bit better, a bit more self-aware, realized that my confidence came from repeatedly keeping promises to myself and doing that consistently over time. What advice do you offer to somebody who struggles with confidence, self-confidence, the inner self-talk that is limiting with whatever it is they want to do? I can't do this, I can't do that. How would you recommend people kind of go from zero to one when it comes to building their confidence or building their self-confidence?
Number one, let's get some disciplines in place. Number one is let's put some strategies, some habits, and routines in place that will lay the foundation for you, basically purchasing your license to believe in yourself, because that's all confidence is, your belief in your ability to do something. So number one, we're going to get the right habits in place. Let's talk about your morning routines and the way that you're taking care of your body and the way that you're showing up at work and making sure that you're washing the dishes at night, making sure you're making the bed in the morning. These little things, they start to add up, because we all as humans have a sixth sense when we're dealing with another person. If something is just off about them, even if they're presenting themselves as one way, if something just seems off, we can sense that in people, and there's only so much you can fool another person. So making sure that you have all of your stuff together that you can control is the first step in discipline. The first step in discipline, which is the foundation of confidence. The next thing when it comes to the actual confidence piece is, a lot of people like to talk about the concept of fake it till you make it. And I've talked about this in my books. I've done a TED talk talking about this. I do not believe in fake it till you make it. But I do believe the thought, but I believe that it's an oxymoron. Doesn't actually exist the way that people think it does. Because if you really think about what fake it till you make it is telling you, it is arguing that you are pretending to be something that you're not, or someone who you're not, for a certain period of time until your normal self, will say, takes over and you're actually that person. Here's the problem with that. The problem with fake it till you make it is kind of like the same problem that Cinderella had in that fairy tale, is that even though she's in that beautiful ball gown, as soon as the clock strikes 12, she goes back from the beautiful ball gown back to the rags. And that's what happens when you're faking it. When you tell your brain that you are faking something, that you are pretending, then your subconscious mind understands that that pretending at some point must come to an end, and you have to go back to who you were before. That's the problem with fake it till you make it. So what you can do instead is become that person. And the difference between faking it and becoming it is, instead of you saying you're pretending to be something, you say, I am becoming this individual. Now, some people might say, well, that's just semantics. And I say, you're right. And semantics matter. The words that you say to yourself matters, because your subconscious mind takes everything literally. So what you're going to say instead is, I am being this high level person. I'm being this person that is the most confident version of myself, even if you need to borrow that confidence from another person. So if you're not confident as a coach or a trainer or a speaker or a podcaster, ask yourself, who is someone who is confident that you've seen? Or if you have to imagine a person who's very confident at doing the thing that you're doing, ask yourself, how does that person walk into a room? What do they see when they look in the mirror? How do they speak when they actually talk? How are they holding their body? What is their posture like? How do they feel when they walk in the room and they know that everybody's looking at them, the most confident person, versus how you're walking in the room? And your job is to just assume the energy of that person, just their energy, not their skill set. You don't have to talk how they talk. Just assume their energy. How do they feel about themselves and about what they're doing right there at that moment? And how do they want everybody else to perceive them? Or actually, how are they making everybody else perceive them is a better question, because other people perceive you based on the way you present yourself. So all you're going to do is assume that person's posture, literally and figuratively, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. When you do that, you have become that person. And here's the interesting thing about that, Brian, whenever I do this exercise with people, is when you're doing that and you start to assume that posture, what I just showed you is that you already had that person within you. Because I didn't give it to you. I didn't throw some magic pixie dust on you. I did not wave a magic wand. All I did was give you a different frame from which to build your energy, from which to set yourself up. And you were able to assume that person within 30 seconds of us talking about it, which means you always had this capability within you. You just needed the right words and the right approach and the right reasons to tap into it. So you already had this ability. So now all you have to do is stick with this energy for a consistent period of time. And what's going to happen is the people around you and everyone you come across, they're going to start perceiving you as this person that you're showing up as, because we don't have time to dig deep into whether a person is this who they really are all the time or not. We just go off what we see. We go off of surface approaches. So they're going to start treating you as the confident person you showed up as. You're going to feel more confident because they're treating you like that. And then they're going to treat you even better because you're approaching them as confident. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Confidence and a lack of confidence fulfill themselves. So this is how someone can start building that confidence. Borrow it from an imaginary person. Borrow it from the best version of yourself. Borrow it from another person that you know literally. And as long as you can keep that posture, then people will treat you like that. You will become that, and then you can stay that. It becomes a habit, it becomes a routine, and it becomes a discipline.
That's fantastic advice. Taking things, that's something I've done myself, Dre, where when I'm feeling like a poorer or weaker version of myself is taking control. So, you know, if I'm having, you know, a fight with my partner or mornings that I don't want to get up at 5 a.m. to go and work out or do my run, I'm like, well, is this what my best version of myself would do? Is this how they'd act? Is this how they'd speak to themselves? And in most of the cases, it's not. And then you're just living up to that expert version of yourself or the higher whatever you want to be, or you borrow it from somebody else, which is great advice, I think, for anyone that struggles with confidence. You also mentioned there, words you say to yourself matters. And I couldn't be a bigger believer in this, because I think your self-talk is so important. As somebody who's falling on both sides of the spectrum, where I've had really poor self-talk and as a result didn't go after things that I wanted, and have fallen on the other side where I feel I can talk myself through anything and I can persevere and push through anything. How important is the self-talk and the words you speak to yourself? Talk about how to rewire that, how to flip that. If you're someone who defaults to, I won't say speaking negatively of themselves, but definitely not being the best version of themselves, how would you start to rewire that if you have someone who struggles with the internal self-dialogue? The analogy I use is, you know, don't let your biggest enemy live between your two ears. How would you recommend people start to move towards rewiring that inner self-dialogue they have when it tells them they can or can't do something when in fact their, you know, best versions could? What would you advise there, Dre?
I would say being your biggest enemy. So you were saying you wouldn't say that. I know it's to be polite to maybe some people who have this challenge, but I'll say that is exactly what the challenge is that the most negative conversations and the most negative things that each of us hears in our own minds is not coming from a hater, is not coming from an internet troll, is not coming from some negative person on TV, is coming from you. It is coming from yourself. We have more conversation with ourselves than we have with anyone else through our lives. We are our most frequent companion. And what I tell people is, if another human being talked to you the way that you talk to yourself, you would not be friends with that person. So that self-conversation is more important than any other conversation that you have, more important than your trainer, your coach, your partner, your kids, your boss, anyone else that you talk to. Is the conversation that you have with yourself has more effect over who you are, what you do, who you're being, and the results that you end up getting in your life. So we absolutely need to take control of this. It's the most important conversation that you'll ever have, because it's always going on. Because even thinking is just a conversation. It's basically an ongoing Q&A session you're having with yourself. So how do you work on that? First of all, is we got to get conscious of it. Because 85% of our thoughts, and I talked about this in my book, Work on Your Game, 85% of our thoughts are unconscious and habitual, meaning we're not even aware that they're happening, but it's the same things that we're saying to ourselves over and over and over again. Therefore, if you look at your own life and you look at every aspect of your life, the aspects in which things are working the way that you want them and they're going positively forward, you're having an unconscious conversation that is serving you and helping you. And the areas in which things are not where you want them to be, you are having an unconscious conversation habitually that is pulling you backward and slowing you down. So the first thing you have to do is get conscious about the unconscious. In other words, you have to start noticing what you are saying to yourself. You have to start noticing these negative thoughts, noticing that when some stimulus happens, what is your response mentally? What is your response emotionally? Somebody said this, you automatically go to a certain place. Something happens, you automatically get yourself in a certain frame of mind, and it's happening over and over again. And if you think, if someone's 25 years old listening to this now, 30 years old listening to this right now, how many times have you had that conversation? We're talking thousands of times you have done the exact same thing mentally. You want to talk about habits? You want to talk about systems and strategies and disciplines? All right, discipline does not just work in a positive direction. It works in both directions. So if you have been having unconscious, habitual thoughts 85% of the time for 20 years or 40 years or 57 years, whatever your age is, imagine how strong those grooves are in your brain. So the first thing you have to do is get conscious and understand that these things are happening. Then the next thing that you do is start consciously changing these habitual thoughts and conversations that you're having with yourself. Once you're conscious of them, then you can do something about them. But if they're unconscious, you can't change them. So that's the first step, is getting conscious about them. And then when we talk about changing them, here's what you do. And I wrote a whole book on this called The Mental Workbook. It is all about you telling yourself three things. Number one, What do you want to achieve in your life? You will write down everything that you want to achieve in your life in detail. Second thing, what actions are you willing to take in order to achieve these outcomes? And the third thing, and this is the important question that most people never ask themselves, because most people understand the concept of the first one, which is some people call it goal setting, right? And the second one is, okay, doing the work. And most people who are listening to this show right here, you're willing to do the work. You might be at work right now or on your way to work. Most people understand the concept of having goals and working hard to reach them. All right, that's not news. The third thing, though, this is the question most people never ask. Who do I need to be while I am doing this work in order to reach my goals? Who do I need to be as a person? This is not about actions. This is about thinking, is about energy, is about your self-perception, is about your self-talk, is about who you see when you look in the mirror. And you need to answer this question also in detail. What type of person do I need to be? And understand, this is not actions. This is not work that you're doing. It's how you're seeing yourself, how you're feeling about yourself, your energy, the way that you're showing up for yourself in life. Because the concept to achieving life is a three-step process. It is be, do, and have in that order. Most people only do steps two and three. They do the hard work, and then they try to have the goals, the results. And then if they don't have the results, what do? They go right back and work harder. All right, did I get the result? No, go work harder again. Did I get the result? No, and they just keep repeating this cycle over and over again, and they never ask themselves who I need to be. When you change who you're being as a person, Brian, what happens is you could go take the exact same actions that you were taking before, and all of a sudden, you're going to get a complete different set of results. Why? It's not because your actions changed. Again, you're doing the exact same actions. What changed is the energy that painted those actions. When you change your energy, you could do the same thing you were doing yesterday, and all of a sudden the results will change because you used a different approach. You had a different spirit. You had a different energy. Everyone says they believe in things like the law of karma and the law of attraction and the law of reciprocity. Everyone says they agree with these things, but then they go out and they act as if they don't understand them. So what everyone needs to do, everybody needs to do this, and I do this every single day, is I start my day by telling myself those three things: what I want to have, what I need to do, and who I'm willing to be, who I need to be as a person. And I have these things that I say to myself every single day. I wrote them down, and I will read them to myself every day at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And I'll tell you why in a minute, why you need to do it at those certain times. And I did it so many times, and now I can do it without looking at it. I can just do it off the top of my head. And the reason you do it first thing in the morning and last thing at night is because those are the times when your mind is most open and most susceptible. And that's when your subconscious mind can be worked on. At the beginning of the day, your mind is not filled up with the clutter of, you know, listening to people like Dre rambling your ear on a podcast or reading somebody's articles or looking at your social media feeds. You don't have all these conscious thoughts clouding your mind. So your subconscious is wide open. So the first things that you take in at the beginning of the day have a huge effect on your subconscious mind. It's kind of like coding your brain for how that day is going to go. And at the end of the night, the last thing that you take in, that's what your subconscious mind is going to be kind of marinating on and working on while you are sleeping, while you're not thinking consciously, the last thing you put in your head. This is why little kids, if you had them watch a scary movie before they go to bed, they wake up with nightmares because the last thing that they saw. Or adults, if you quarrel with your partner or you watch the news and they're telling you some bad news, or you're scrolling through social media and you're reading things that are getting you agitated, and then you go to sleep, it's harder to sleep because that was the last thing that you put on your brain. So you want to make sure you start and end your day with exactly what you want your subconscious mind to be working on. So that's how you rewire that self-talk.
It's great advice. And I think protecting that time and protecting the morning, protecting the evening, again, that's something I've been doing for several years as well for that reason. You know, you're very susceptible to your ideas in the morning. You're fresh with it. But before all the clutter comes in and before you go to bed, you're nearly, as you said, programming your mind before you go to sleep. I always write down my affirmations before bed, less so now because it's kind of automatic. You don't need to, after a certain point, you're just able to rhyme it off in your head in a list. But I'd say for 2 years, Dre, maybe 3 years, I did it every single night, religiously, 365 nights, bang, my affirmations. These are my goals. This is what I want to achieve. This is who I want to become. This is what I want to do. And you start to see things that weren't there, you know, law of attraction, law of reciprocity, reticular activation system, if you're talking cognitive neuroscience, like all of these things start to appear that you might not have seen that were always there. You know, you want to get in shape. Now you're seeing gyms everywhere or personal trainers everywhere. You know, now you're trying to build confidence. You're trying to build mental toughness. You're gravitating towards this content and your books and reading out things that were always there, but now they're more in your face because you've set a specific goal and a specific target, and you're allowing those things to come into your life and come into your consciousness. I'm curious, because you mentioned there the be, do, have, and I had a misconception. So I think I had the order wrong for sure for long periods of my life, Dre. You know, who do you have to become, and then what you do, and then you'll have whatever that thing is you're looking to get. I always had that if I do this, I'll have that and I'll become this. I had it in the wrong order. What's something you've changed your mind about in recent years when it comes to mindset?
That's a really good question. Something that I've changed my mind about when it comes to mindset. That's one no one has ever asked me. I had to think about that one for a minute, Brian. I wasn't expecting that question.
Take your time.
But these things that I've been talking about mindset wise. Yeah, these are things that I've been talking about really for a long time, even from the beginning. But as far as mindset goes, something I have changed my mind about.
Or even to put it in another way, in terms of wording, maybe a belief system or something that you thought was very supportive up until a point, and then at some point in your life, from 2015 onwards, life trajectory changed. You're not a pro baller anymore. You're now focusing on the content, etc. Was there anything that you had to flip? You know, for me, I had a lot of mindset issues. As I said, mental toughness is one where I flip-flopped as well between the importance of it based on the context. But for the biggest one was the wrong order of, you know, the be, do, have for me. But I'm curious if you've had anything similar that has came up for you in recent years.
I'm not sure if there's anything where I was, let's say, preaching it out to my audience, and then I said, all right, well, I got a completely different perspective, but I've updated a lot of things is really what I've done as I get more information and more experience. And one thing that I've found to be really important, something that I find to be a challenge for all people, including myself, is only focusing on the things that you want and not focusing on, you know, negative outcomes, not focusing on, not giving too much time and attention to the things that you don't want. And the longer that you can stay in that mindset, that vibration of positive expectations, the higher the likelihood that you actually get those outcomes. And it's, I tell people, I call it the 48-hour experiment. If you can go 48 straight hours with only positive thoughts and positive expectations, and when people try it, they realize how difficult it is. Usually, you can't even make it through 2 hours, let alone 2 days. And that's been something that's a challenge. Whenever I think about it, I think to myself, all right, have I done that the last 2 days? Probably not. So as far as anything that I completely changed, nothing's coming to mind right now. But that's something that I would say is an ongoing challenge.
Talk to me about bad mental errors that good people make. This is something I really enjoyed in Why I Went On Work On Your Game. Again, I know the most recent book is The Third Day, but when I dived into Work On Your Game, this is one that jumped out. I think it's really interesting. Talk about bad mental errors that good people make.
Those are things. There are many thoughts and habitual thoughts, like I talked about, habitual and unconscious ideas and mindsets that many of us have that if we became conscious of them, we would change them and do something about them. The challenge for many of us is, and many people will die with this challenge, is that we're not even aware that we have these thought habits. So the biggest challenge actually is not the errors themselves. The biggest challenge is becoming aware of the errors. But there are several of them. Do you want to talk about a few of them, Brian?
Yeah, 100%. Pick maybe one or two either of your favorites or the ones that get quoted or commented back most to you, Dre.
Well, the one that gets quoted and remembered the most is what I call being a PIG, a pig, which stands for Professional Information Gatherer. And that is one that I talk about this at my live events. And people remember it, I guess, because I give them the visual of the pig. I guess that's why they remember it. But that's the person who is listening to podcasts, you're reading books, you're going to conferences, you're taking in the information, you're taking pages and pages of notes. And then you're not executing on the things that you heard. You're not actually applying those things. You're taking in the information, and it feels great to take in the information, but you're not applying it. So then a year later, you remember that you read that book or you went to that conference or you get an email from that coach that you hired, and you're like, damn, that person taught me all this stuff, but I haven't applied any of it. And that's what happens when you become that PIG. And we're getting more pigs in the world these days simply because there's more information to gather. All right. Every day somebody's starting a podcast or publishing a book or putting out some mastermind program or offering a coaching program. Everybody's putting out information. So there's a lot of information gathering going on because a lot of information entrepreneurs are selling a lot of stuff. So somebody's buying it. Thing is, if everyone was applying it, that we wouldn't need so many information entrepreneurs, right? Because we'd all be doing what we needed to do. So that's one of the biggest ones is being that professional information gatherer.
So I want to park on that because I think that is definitely going to connect to people listening to this podcast. I call it mentally masturbating, where you're just, you know, soothing right. yourself and actually not taking any action steps that are required to hit an end goal. Let's park on that before we move into the second one, just because I think it's really relevant. How do you avoid becoming a pig, a professional information gatherer? What would be, and again, I know it might sound very obvious as a, you know, don't be aware of it, bring awareness to it, take action steps, but that, from my experience, doesn't tend to be enough sometimes with people. What would you advise mm-hmm. for someone who's listening to this podcast, Dre, who has got 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 pieces of golden nuggets that you've given, that they've decided, I want to do X, Y, or Z, this will improve my life in a positive way, but for some reason they're not able to take action with it? What advice would you offer there, or what would you recommend people do, or what would you recommend they consider to kind of get over that, you know, being a PIG?
You got to build the action bias habit. And what an action bias is a person who is more inclined to take action than to think about action. In other words, the habit of implementation. When you get some information that you know is good and you know is useful, the best thing you can do with it, aside from writing it down so you don't forget, even better than writing it down, is to take an action that implements that information immediately. That's the number one thing that you can do. And you can develop this as a habit. This can become a discipline of yours. Then when you hear new information that is useful to you, take some action, even if it's a small action, but it must be an action that commits you to implementing that information that you just received. You start doing that habitually. You immediately implement when you hear some new information. Instead of just writing it down, instead of just nodding your head, instead of clapping for the person who said it because it was so insightful, actually do something. Now you have built the habit of implementing. And when you implement something, it gives a message to your subconscious that is more important than something that you just wrote down. Hearing something is one level. Writing it down is another level. Actually taking action on it, that's a serious level, because there's only so many things you can do at a time. All right, you can listen to stuff and write things down all day, but when you actually take an action on something, you're making a real physical commitment to it. That's the number one way for you to avoid becoming that information gatherer, because there's nothing wrong with getting information. It's just implementing the information that a lot of people get stuck on.
I'm going to swing it to the other side of the pendulum now as well, because I know that people fall on two sides of this coin. The ones who struggle to take action steps, the action bias, get yourself into the space where you're taking action based on good ideas that come into your mind through podcasts, books, etc. But there's also, and unfortunately, I've had these conversations with people on Instagram DM who are podcast listeners, who will jump on every tip and trick that's offered on a podcast they're listening to. So for example, Dre, if I bring on somebody to talk about intermittent fasting, or another dietitian to talk about ketogenic diets, or somebody else who talks about paleo, I'll have somebody who will potentially go from diet to diet to diet to diet every single week, nearly a shiny object syndrome. And that can be equally as detrimental as opposed to getting clear on what your end goal is and what supports it. With the goal of this podcast, it's to, you know, talk to experts like you when it comes to mindset, but I also talk to people who are experts in their fields when it comes to nutrition, dietitians, nutritionists, etc. But it's all about trying to find the fit on what's going to work best for you, as opposed to you should do this diet and then this diet and then this diet, where you're switching it every single week. I know shiny object syndrome, I can't remember the exact labeling you use, because I've seen a video where you didn't say shiny object syndrome. You had another word for it, but I can't recall at the minute. How do you avoid
shiny information syndrome?
That was the one, shiny information syndrome. How do you, yeah. what do you recommend people do when it comes to shiny information syndrome?
You must choose 3 to 5 experts on whatever subject and ignore everybody else. Simple as that. So if you're going to, you want to get information on, let's say your fitness, how many fitness people are there putting information out there? Thousands, tens of thousands. You probably couldn't find them all, even if it was your full-time job. So pick the 3 to 5 people, and maybe even 3 to be even more tight, who you believe have the information that you need. You believe they have enough expertise and enough experience that whatever challenge you have, they have an answer for it. They can help you with it. And then just dive as deep as you possibly can into all of their information. So in other words, you're going to go an inch wide and a mile deep on that person's world. That means every book they've written, go get it. Every video they put out, watch it. Every podcast they do, listen to it. Everything that they put out, you consume it. You should know their whole world inside and out. Go deep into everything. You just heard about them today, but they've been creating content for 7 years. Go back 7 years and listen to all the stuff that they put out. Read all the things that they've written. Go deep with that person. and they will give you all the information that you need. You pick 3 to 5 people. That's it on each topic. Because if you're trying to take all the information from everybody, again, you're going to have shiny information syndrome. Every time you hear of a new person who tells you a way to run Facebook ads, you're going to be changing your whole system up. You can't do that and get consistent results, because eventually what's going to happen is you're going to run into people who have conflicting ideas, and both of them have created success. So how do you know which one to listen to? They both created success. They just did it different ways. You have to pick one. So that's why you got to choose your gurus, choose who your experts are going to be, and then don't listen to anybody else.
Yeah, the advice I offer is nearly identical to that, so I have nothing to add. We were talking on bad mental errors there, Dre, and I stopped you just to unpack the PIG a little bit. What was the second one you were thinking of?
Replaying bad movies. This was actually the first one that I mentioned in that chapter in my book when I talked about bad mental errors. A bad movie is kind of like, well, let's talk about an actual bad movie. I'm sure everyone who's listening to this has either fired up on, you know, HBO Max or Hulu or Netflix, or you even went to a movie theater and you saw a movie that just sucked. It just wasn't a good movie. Maybe you walked out in the middle of the movie. If you're watching it online, you just stopped the movie and said, all right, let me watch a different documentary. Let me watch a different show because this one's just not any good. When you know that you've seen a bad movie, you know that the movie sucked, the question that I will ask everyone who's listening to this, would you go and pay to go to the movie theater and watch that movie again? Would you invest your time and turn on Netflix and watching that TV show from the beginning all over again? The answer is, of course you wouldn't, because you already have watched it and you already know it sucks. So you're not going to invest any more of your valuable time and attention into watching that movie again. The challenge for all of us mentally is that we do this over and over and over again in our own lives. This is part of, as I mentioned earlier, 85% of your thoughts are habitual and unconscious. So some of those habitual and unconscious thoughts are serving us and helping us, and some of them are pulling us backwards and absolutely not serving us. They're actually sabotaging us. These are the bad movies. So if you think of any situation in your life that didn't go the way that you wanted it to go, you put out a product, nobody bought it. You tried to do something, it just didn't work. Somebody was supposed to, you depended on someone to come through for you, and they did the exact opposite of coming through for you, whatever you want to call that. And unconsciously and habitually, you keep replaying that bad movie in your head over and over again. And remember something, your subconscious does not understand the difference between imagination and reality. So every time you mentally replay that bad movie of the situation that you did not want to occur, but it did occur, all you're doing is telling your subconscious over and over again how to feel. You're telling it, I want to feel negative like I felt that day. I want to feel like I can't trust anybody. I want to feel like the world is against me. I want to feel like everything I try doesn't work, because that's how you felt when that bad movie happened. Now, I'm not telling you that you can avoid negative feelings or negative situations. What I'm telling you is, every time you replay it in your mind, it's as if you're making it happen again, because your mind doesn't know that you're just thinking about it, that it's not actually happening. It believes that it's actually taking place. So what you need to do is, again, get conscious about the unconscious. Notice when you're having those negative thoughts. Notice when you're saying things to yourself about past situations that did not serve you, that do not make you feel good, didn't make you feel good then, they're not making you feel good now, and stop watching a bad movie over and over again. Create a new movie, find a new documentary to watch on Netflix, and replace that bad movie with something good.
I love that. I think awareness is the first step towards change, and I think it's just reinforcing that with the story. I love that too. It's bad mental errors that good people make. I think it's chapter 11 or 12 for people listening who end up picking up the book after this. I really enjoyed that one in particular. Dre, I've only got one final question, and there's been knowledge bombs left, right and center here for people when it comes to rewiring their mindset and just building a stronger mindset with discipline, the habits, the confidence, the mental toughness that all comes with bringing awareness and consciousness to the thoughts and negative behavioral patterns and negative thoughts that you've been having. But Dre, if you had access, I know you put out content a lot on YouTube, but you put out quite a bit on Instagram as well. If you could put up one post that hit absolutely everybody on Instagram who is into personal development and is looking to build their mindset, what would you write in that post?
Man, I only pick one. I would have to there's so many. I could look at my own Instagram. I'll pick all of them. But I think one of the most popular ones that I put out in the last, let's just say, the last couple of months was me talking about that 48-hour experiment, going 48 hours with only positive thoughts. And the reason why I would go with that one is because It's a concept that won't go over anybody's head. Everyone can understand exactly what I'm challenging you to do. And almost everybody, when you really think about it, it seems easy, right? 2 days, just think positively. But as soon as you start trying to do it, you'll realize how hard it actually is. So that one, even when I posted it, the comments that I was getting from people and the engagement was people just letting me know, like, damn, it sounds like a very simple thing to do, but it's not so easy. I posted on Facebook as well. It is not an easy thing to do. It's just staying, keeping your mind in the positive. And again, remembering, if we can get more conscious about the fact that every time we have a negative thought, our brain does not know that we're just thinking. It's just an idle thought. Our brain subconsciously experiences it the same way as if it's actually happening. And we might just be thinking about something that happened 7 years ago, but we're getting mad about it all over again. Our subconscious doesn't know you're thinking about something old. It considers it as something that's happening right now. So if I had to pick one off the top of my head, I would really take, you know, everything I wrote in that, you know, 65,000 word book. But that was not going to fit in an Instagram post. So I would go with that one because that's the freshest one on my mind.
That's a
48-hour experiment.
I love that. And it's such a great way to finish. And I think that's a call to action I'm going to give to people. Anyone that tries the 48 hours positive thoughts challenge, hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Brian_Keen_fitness. And it's Dre. Is it Dre_Baldwin? Is that the handle on Instagram? Off the top of my head, I have it written down, but I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, Dre.
Just Dre Baldwin. No underscore.
No underscore. Awesome. So anyone that tries that 48-hour positive thoughts challenge, hit us up on Instagram. Send us a DM. Post it on your stories. Let us know how you're finding it, because although there's genius and simplicity there, I know it's a lot more difficult because we just have automatic negative thoughts. I've had Dr. Amen on the podcast and he talks about the automatic negative thoughts, your ants, and I think the 48-hour positive thought challenge is a great way to potentially rewire that. Dre, I've really enjoyed this conversation. As I said, so many valuable golden nuggets for people to take home. For everybody listening, where's the best place for them to connect with you? Is it through the website? Is it through YouTube, Instagram, and the books? Where's the best place for people to pick up all of that information?
Well, the best place to connect with me is all of the above. I'm on every social media platform. You can just look up my name, Dre, D-R-E, Baldwin. I'm on Instagram. I use Instagram stories all day, so I just probably use that app more time than any other, but I post on all apps every day. I reply to my comments on YouTube. I reply on Facebook. I reply on Twitter. So I'm on actually LinkedIn. I'm on every app, so you can find me on each one. Follow my Instagram at Dre Baldwin. If you would like to get a free copy of my newest book, it is called The Third Day, The Decision That Separates the Pros from the Amateurs. All you have to do is cover the shipping. You just go to thirddaybook.com. That's all spelled out, thirddaybook.com. I'm sure the link will be in the show notes somewhere here. And that book, Work on Your Game, we talked about that a lot here today. When you get the book, The Third Day, we'll take you through a whole funnel, and I'm probably going to offer you 10 books instead of just one. So you can get one, you can get two, you can get six, you can get 10. I'm going to offer you a lot of books. Work on Your Game will be one of the books inside of that funnel that you can get when you go to thirddaybook.com. So anywhere on the internet that you like to spend time, just look my name up. I'll be there.
And that is a great way to go a mile deep with the content for sure. And for everybody listening, I will link those on the show notes on briankeenfitness.com. Everything we've talked about in today's episode, thethirddaybook.com, all of Dre's books, his Instagram handle, YouTube page. I'll link up the TED Talks on there as well for anyone that wants to go check out those four talks. Dre, thank you so much again for all you do, mate. Thank you so much again for your time. And I'll chat to you again real soon.
Absolutely, Brian. Thank you for sharing your platform. I appreciate the opportunity.
There you have it. Mental toughness coach Dre Baldwin on building confidence, developing discipline, and why you should never fake it until you make it. Really enjoyable conversation. Very heavy on the mindset side today. So hopefully you got loads from it. As always, if you did, as I said in the ending of the podcast, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories. You can tag me, Brian_Keen_fitness, and you can tag Dre Baldwin on Instagram. That's all from this week. Catch you all next Monday.